The following is a sermon that was preached at Good News Lutheran Church in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. It was preached on Sunday, July 18th, 2021, on the basis of Jeremiah 23, verses 1 through 6. For more information or to view our entire sermon library, visit goodnewslc.org. Thank you for listening.
Recently, I listened to an interview that involved a woman by the name of Yomni Park. Yomni Park grew up in North Korea under the regime of Kim Jong-il. From her childhood, she recalls how regularly dead bodies, people who had died from starvation, were just kind of lining the street in the town where she lived. She recalls eating things like grasshoppers and dragonflies just to get a little bit of protein in her diet. She recalls being forced to work for the government in collecting feces, both from animals and from human beings, because it was the only source of fertilizer that they had. And perhaps worst of all, growing up, she had no idea that anybody else on planet Earth had it any better than she did. Because, of course, all of the information that she was ever allowed to see or read or hear was carefully controlled by the government who oppressed her. At the age of 13, Yeomni Park and her mother successfully escaped North Korea and went to China. Unfortunately, that escape was facilitated by human traffickers, and so she was just trading in one form of slavery for another. Thankfully, however, she eventually escaped China as well, and now she lives in America. She's still just 27 years old. She has a degree now from Columbia University. She's a published author and is a very outspoken activist against the North Korean regime. Now, out of all the details that caught my attention as I listened to that interview, out of all the details of her story that were very sad and very tragic, one especially stuck out in my mind. You see, while Ms. Park and her mother were in China, they came across some Chinese Christian missionaries who were there. They regularly met with them and went to their Bible studies. And yet she recalls at one point that the pastor who led that group told her that because of things that she had done, because of things she had really been forced to do while in slavery under threat of her life, she was so sinful that she could never be forgiven. She was so dirty that she could never be made clean. Now, my point in telling you that story this morning is not so much to get you to think a certain way about an evil North Korean dictator. It's not so much to get you to think a certain way about a pastor who would actually withhold from someone the very thing that he is supposed to freely dispense. Instead, my reason for mentioning that story is to ask you this important question. What in the world are we supposed to make of a God who would give authority to both of those people in the first place? As Americans, it comes pretty natural for us to be skeptical of authority, certainly authority that is highly concentrated and localized in one or a few people. Our entire nation is built on the principle that authority needs to be dispersed. Our founding fathers established three branches of government. In our country, authority is separated, and powers are limited among those three branches, and there are checks and balances among those three branches. And as Americans, who are, of course, also Christians, it's very easy for us to think of our faith in sort of similar terms. There are, of course, those people who say that they want to be spiritual without being religious, which is sort of just another way of saying, I don't want anyone to be in charge of my soul other than me. And even for people who regularly go to church, the idea that that church or that the spiritual leaders within that church have actual authority over their souls is an idea that at the very least is unfamiliar to many and probably raises a few eyebrows to say the least. And when you consider the history of both political leaders and spiritual leaders that have existed in our world and even in our country, that's no surprise. So back to the question, why does God continue to give that authority to people? Why doesn't he just do what our founding fathers did? Why doesn't he just take that authority and spread it out, disperse it, dilute it as much as possible? As we look at the verses that are in front of us this morning, we're going to see that God does just the opposite. These verses tell us how God deals with bad leaders. And as we look at these verses this morning, we're going to see that the way God does that is not the American way. It's not the way that we would probably do it. As we look at these verses, we're going to see that God's solution to bad leadership is more leadership, not less. The leaders in question in these verses are what we would call kings. But keep in mind that in the ancient Near East, including among God's people Israel, kings were not just political leaders, they were also spiritual leaders too. They were really responsible for the total care of the people that they ruled. And so it's no wonder that in the ancient Near East, those kings were often referred to as shepherds. The implication being that the people they ruled were the sheep of their flock. Well, for God's people Israel, they had had a string of very bad shepherds. Basically, since King David, Israel's greatest king, it had sort of been more or less all downhill from there. And so as a result, the worst possible thing that could possibly happen to sheep was happening to them. They were being scattered. They were being sent into exile in Babylon. And so in these verses, through the prophet Jeremiah, the Lord wants those very bad leaders to know that they have it coming. That even though they haven't been paying attention to the needs of the people that they serve, God has very much been paying attention to them. And he is going to punish them. He is going to take their authority away. And he was going to bring back, he was going to regather the flock of sheep that they were responsible for scattering. But then notice what happens next. After that scattered flock was back together, Jeremiah says this: I will place shepherds over them. So the Lord takes away the authority from those bad shepherds, but then he replaces them. He gives that very same authority to other shepherds. God's solution to bad leadership is not to eliminate leadership altogether. It's not less leadership, it's actually more. Now, in our day and age, authority looks a little bit different. For starters, we don't have a king or a queen, and even beyond that, we sort of separate political leaders from religious leaders. We separate those two things. And not only that, but the only system that you and I are really familiar with, that we've ever grown up with, is one where we get to actually have an active role in choosing those leaders. We get to vote for which political leaders we're going to have. We get to choose which church we're going to join, and therefore what spiritual leaders we are going to have. And because we have such an active role in choosing our leaders, the impression is very quickly given that we could just as easily choose to have no leaders at all. Now, I'm by no means saying that it's a bad thing that we get to vote in our country or that church membership in our country is a voluntary thing. But very easily, the impression can be given that the reason that those political leaders or those spiritual leaders have authority is because they got it from us. Because we decided to willingly give it to them. And in the process, it's very easy for us to ignore what the Bible clearly says, that both with political leaders and with spiritual leaders, their authority has been given to them by God. It's also very easy for us to ignore what the Bible very clearly says about us. God gives us shepherds, well, because we are sheep. Contrary to what we might like to believe about ourselves, we cannot provide everything that we need for body and soul all by ourselves. We need to be a part of communities and societies, and we need leaders in those places. We also need to be a part of churches, and we need leaders in those places too. And so a situation where an individual would be existing sort of out there all by themselves with absolutely no authority in their life, with no one to answer to in all the world except themselves, that's not some utopian ideal of what freedom or liberty looks like. Again, it is the worst possible thing for a sheep to be scattered from its flock and to be scattered from its shepherd. And so that's why you heard Mark tell us Jesus did what he did. When he saw that flock of sheep that had been scattered from its flock and from its shepherd, Jesus didn't applaud them. Jesus didn't commend them. Jesus had compassion on them. This was a problem that needed to be addressed. This was a situation that needed to be solved. Now, it's another sermon for another day to talk a little bit about what the Bible also says to both those political and those spiritual leaders that God gives authority to. It's another sermon for another day to talk about the standards that he holds them to and the warnings that he gives them if they would neglect or if they would abuse the authority that they have been given. At the very least, these verses from Jeremiah show us that when there are bad leaders, God by no means turns a blind eye to that fact. But at the very same time, he does not eliminate leaders from people's lives altogether. Instead, he takes those bad leaders, he takes their power away from them, but then he replaces them with other leaders. Once again, God's solution to bad leadership is not less leadership, but more. So where does that then leave us? It would seem to put us in a situation similar to the one that God's people were in. You get one bad leader, God takes his power away from him, God replaces him with someone else, but then that next leader is just as bad as the one who came before him. Round and round it goes. If God is so committed to replacing bad leaders with more leaders, it would seem that we are destined to be stuck in that vicious cycle. But what if that's kind of the point? What if part of what God is doing in being so committed to replacing bad leaders with more leaders is to teach us that leaders, as much as they are intended to be a blessing in our life, cannot possibly be the ultimate shepherd that we need? That none of them, no matter how good they might be, cannot possibly provide the totality of the care that we need as sheep. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? As much as we as Americans are skeptical of authority, as much as we like to think that we want to keep as much authority and as much power in our own hands as we possibly can, how quickly we are to idolize certain leaders, to give them heroic, messianic, divine powers almost, as if no matter what the problem might be, they can solve it as long as we put them in control. What if God is trying to teach us not to do that, not to put our trust in human leaders? If by continually replacing bad leaders with more leaders, even the best of which have tons and tons of flaws, what if God is teaching us to keep looking for the real leader that we need? That as he replaces bad leaders with more leaders, he's teaching us to look for the one leader who can truly be called good. Because, of course, God's plan all along was to send us a leader just like that. Jeremiah says, "The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch, a king who will reign wisely and do what is just and right in the land. In his days, Judah will be saved and Israel will live in safety." So David's royal family line was going to be reduced to a stump. Bad leader after bad leader would teach the people not to trust even in the greatest of kings. But then God promised that from that dead and lifeless stump, a branch would shoot forth. A king would come. And that promised king, our good shepherd Jesus, was to be given authority over every single facet of our lives. Our physical lives, our spiritual lives too. He would be in charge of all of it, and he would use that authority well. Not necessarily how we would. Not necessarily how we often tell him to. Not necessarily in a way that makes sense or seems to be fair to us, but well, wisely, rightly, and justly. In fact, this coming king would even be in charge of the area of our life where we are most reluctant to give control to anyone else. One of the other fascinating details about hearing the story of Yeongomni Park was hearing about North Korea's system of collective guilt. In North Korea, if you commit a crime, not only can you be punished for that, but so can your parents, so can your siblings, so can your children. It's one of the ways that that evil regime keeps total control over people's lives. Even if you have done nothing wrong, no doubt they can dig up some sort of crime by some long-dead relative and punish you anyway. Taking your guilt or taking your innocence and putting it in the control of somebody else seems to be about the most inhumane thing possible. It runs contrary to every idea that we have about liberty and human rights. And yet it is exactly what God promises to do with the king that he intended to send. Jeremiah tells us that this king would have a name. His name would be the Lord, our righteousness. Our righteousness, our guilt, or our innocence is the area of our life where we are least willing, most reluctant to give control to anyone else. And yet God makes it clear that this coming king would have authority over that area of our life too. Only he would use that authority again well, wisely, and justly. He would use that authority not to assign us guilt even when we are innocent. Instead, he would use that authority to assign us innocence even though we are so guilty. Jesus would come to live a perfect life, not for himself, but for us. He would come to pay the punishment, not for his own sins, but for the sins of the whole world. He would come to be righteous so that he could then offer that righteousness as a completely free gift to us. And in fact, one of the neatest details about these verses is one that's found in just a teeny tiny little detail of the text. In fact, one that's kind of hidden in our English translations. Jeremiah tells us that the name of this coming king, the Lord our righteousness, would not just be the name that God would give that king, it would also be the name by which people would call him. In other words, the very same people who are so skeptical of authority, the very same people who are so reluctant to let their guilt or their innocence be in the possession of someone else would joyfully call this king the Lord our righteousness. When God replaces bad leaders with more leaders, it forces them to keep looking for the one leader who can truly be called good, and in Jesus that search comes to an end. In Jesus we have that leader we need. And when you have found him, once we have found him, you'll be willing to follow him wherever he leads. Over the next few weeks, as we continue this sermon series that's entitled Sound Bites, we're going to be hearing some of the things that Jesus, our good shepherd, says to us. As is often the case with Jesus, some of the things that we're going to hear sound a little bit perplexing, a little bit challenging to us, a little bit as if they are going to make our lives more difficult if we listen to the things that Jesus says. And yet these words that Jesus speaks, these are sort of like the food that Jesus, our good shepherd, wants us to graze on. And so as we hear those words over the course of the next several weeks, remember what we are hearing today. That Jesus is this king, that Jesus is our good shepherd. And as our good shepherd, he came to take all of our guilt and to give us all of his righteousness. In other words, he has proven that he can be trusted with our righteousness, the most valuable possession that we possess. And if Jesus can be trusted with our righteousness, you better believe he can be trusted with everything else too. Amen.